Pignotto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
All right, another Brock and Salk podcast. Another one following a Seahawks win. 2-0 Hawks. 2-0 Seahawks. How good was Sunday? And cool. I mean, the game was the topper. Just in general, sports fans. I assume if you're listening to the show, you're a sports fan, right? I mean, it's not like you just stumble across a podcast. Not like we're on the radio and like somebody left the station on and the next thing you know, you're here. Like,
you don't know what kind of metadata tags I'm putting on this podcast.
I guess that's true.
We're getting circulated all over some weird circles around this country.
All over Gizmag. It's like, what was the pod thing you found?
Podbay?
Podbay. Yeah, we're all over Podbay.
Yeah, we're on Podbay.
It's not like you still think this is on Cairo until you wake up one day and you're like, I was waiting for the news. And instead you found Brock. So, obviously you're a sports fan. So, remember when there were no games like a couple of months ago? And we were just like,
remember it well.
Whoa, that's not fair to the Korean Baseball League.
All right. Remember when there were no games in America.
And it's not fair to all the replays that we watched for week after week after week.
It's not fair to all the 30 and 30s, all the yes. documentaries that we fawned over and said were the best thing that ever happened.
I think it's pretty fair to that.
It's not fair to cornhole.
Mike, the Mariners went 70-0 during their classic games in that stretch. I'll have you know.
I feel like, first of all, they didn't. They lost some of their classic games.
They were like 65-5. It was a pretty memorable run.
All right. I think it is fair to all of those games to say that, remember when there were no games and it was awful? How great was Sunday? Woke up, I mean, I didn't do anything.
Woo!
Woke up, watched the Open, which was like, that was one, I really enjoyed it.
Even on an 80 degree sunny day, you didn't do anything?
On a what? A what? A what Wasn't now? I did
Isn't
take
it like 80 and sunny as
it
the
was
smoke?
Nice. Yeah, I woke up, I teed off at 7 a.m., got home for the U.S. Open final round, then watched some late game NFL, Seahawks Sunday night. What a day, Mike.
I briefly saw a sliver of blue sky on Sunday when Avery and I were at the driving range. You did great, by the way. But, I mean, between Bryson, which I just loved. I love anytime anyone kind of just does it differently and, you know, sticks it in the face of the establishment. Extra innings, Mariners game, great football games. The Cowboys come back, which I was rooting for. And I know I shouldn't because I don't like the Cowboys. But since I said Dan Quinn was going to get fired soon, I guess I kind of like
invested interest.
I had you a want little to be bit, right. Yeah, no, you want to be right.
Stand in the game.
In being right, which is such a lousy way to watch sports. And then the Seahawks game is the topper, man. What an incredible day.
My heart was pounding like it used to pound in the early days of like 2012, yeah. 2013. Just you would think after 7 or 8 years of watching these guys, of kind of knowing how the script usually goes. I know that wasn't the case week one because they won by more than one possession and then actually controlled the game and largely dominated it in the second half. But it was a reminder of the script that usually plays out as it did a year ago with, I think, every one of their 10 wins was a one possession score. And this was down to the final 3 feet. The final yard, as it's been numerous times for Pete and Russ along the way, and I was in my horse stance. My heart is beating through my chest.
What is the horse stance, just so I know? Because I've heard you say that a few times.
What's the horse stance? You kind of stand up, and it's, you know, you widen your base a little right. bit, and you bend down, a real power position.
Hands on your knees?
It can be. I think mine are probably up in the air, but yes,
in
kind of
air.
Like a Bobby Wagner middle linebacker before he makes that stop. For me, yeah, they're kind of up in the air in total chaos.
We're all imitating it. So let me see. You're kind of crouched in a ball.
Yes.
So it's yep. praising.
So yes. yeah, you put your as if like you're just doing an athletic stance with your
Correct.
Hands on your knees.
Yep.
But rather than putting your hands out wide like in basketball, they
right.
go up,
straight up, like you're a referee making a field goal.
How you see a lot of horses standing, which is why it's a very equestrian position. Brock is like, now Molly, this is my horse stance. This is how a lot of horses stand.
I would
they
say
put their
mine,
rear paws
no, no, no.
down.
You've seen American Pharaoh
bend their
do this.
Knees, then get their front hooves in the air.
I would say my hands are probably by my shoulders, kind of palms in, just the whole frantic. Like
it's
oh
like you've been
gosh.
Stopped by the cops. Like stick them up. And you go, oh, all right.
But his hands are facing each other.
Oh, yes. oh.
Yes.
Why? No, it's an Icelandic soccer chant.
This is not making any sense at all.
Anywho, it was insane, and you're right, to the very last second. Just nuts.
I gotta tell you, man, you're crazy.
I am.
Completely nuts.
And then
you just figured that out. It's how I stand in the booth.
And then following.
That's how I stand up in the booth in big moments.
No,
Greg
not in front of Greg Jennings. You don't do that.
He looks at me funny. Why do you think the game ended? He's like, dude, you're really into that thing.
Wait, when do you get big moments? You just get blowouts.
Huh? No.
Big moments. You just watch teams get blown out. You haven't had a good game in a year.
There's big moments even amidst blowouts. All right. There's
when he knows he's about to get another coach fired.
Has Greg Jennings or Chris Myers ever been like, hey, is that your horse stance?
Wait, are you doing an equestrian horse stance? I am.
Okay,
thank you.
Move on.
Is it a horse stance or a horse dance? Because those sound really similar.
Stance. Position. Hmm. All right. Okay, move this along, please. Right.
Well, I just wanted to understand because I too had my heart pounding, but I was in more of a repose. I was.
Are
on
you
the
just?
Couch.
You can just sit there. The three of you can just sit on your couch.
No,
I was. Sitting What's on, that? I mean, I was leaning forward.
On the fourth down play.
Like, lying
okay,
four, down.
No. Give me each of your situations since you detailed mine thoroughly.
All right, first thing I had to do. I want to be very clear. I had to turn off the computer because everyone on Twitter was like. 30 seconds ahead. Everyone at the game, I got John Boyle and Stacy and everybody, and they're just like, and they have enough time to fully type out what has happened plus some analysis before the play even starts.
You got to be first, Mike. You got
to
be first.
You don't have to be that first. It was so aggravating. He's like, close the computer, pushed it away, because I didn't want to see like, this is over, the Seahawks lost. Secondly, I was sitting because I was absolutely expecting Cam to rumble into the end zone. And there wasn't a part of me that thought the Seahawks were going to be able to stop that play.
Are you in your basement?
Yeah. I had to go. I came up for dinner kind of in the second half and then went back down into the basement for the end of the game.
So you can just sit on your couch. You can sit on your butt and just watch that.
Well, yeah. And play. I stood up and yelled and lost my voice a little bit when they did it. It was a woo and a.
Yes.
I had to get up off the couch, but that was mainly because I was at my brother-in-law's place and I had already gone up to get my keys and wallet and was like, well, this thing's over. Yeah. Let's go. Yep. And, oh, my gosh. They stopped him.
Sitting next to my brother-in-law on my own couch, and I'm just talking incessantly because of how angry I am.
No,
and all the things
you
that
don't
got
say.
That place. I can't believe that they let this go all the way down to the 1 yard. This is obviously what's going to happen next. And just talking about how terrible everything was until it happened.
Along those lines, can I just ask a question? With about 2 minutes left, just over 2 minutes left, Seahawks got the ball back up 5. And I found myself thinking, do you feel better about a team, any team, but certainly the Seahawks, up 5, about 2 minutes left, the other team has 2 timeouts, or would you feel better down 2 in that situation? Because it is, in my view, and I don't have like analytics to back this up, but just in the view of a person watching a lot of games, it is much easier to score 3 points with 2 minutes left than it is to keep the ball away from the other team for those 2 minutes.
It feels that way. Yeah, that'd be an interesting number, and I'm sure we'll, after one of our diehard analytics folks and database people will listen to this, they'll tweet us at Brock Ewart at Mike Salk and let us know exactly what those numbers are. My gut still says, Salk, you want to be up 5.
I don't think I do.
I do.
I don't.
I want
if
to
I have
play,
a good quarterback?
I want to play ahead and
I have
I want
a good
to finish
quarterback.
The game.
I have a What's good that? Quarterback. I mean, I get it if you have, Matt Stafford or some chump. But, like, I know he's playing well or whatever. But, like, if I have a good quarterback, you wouldn't rather, like, be aggressive and go forward instead of playing back on your heels? I don't know.
In the final 4 minutes, I'd much rather have a lead. I would. And put it on my good quarterback and my O-line to go finish it. I thought you were going to say, don't you think Pete should have gone for it on 4th and 1?
He absolutely should have gone for it on 4th and 1.
Really? Yes.
100%.
Yes.
There's not a doubt in my mind.
No way.
He should have run the ball on 3rd and 1 and on 4th and 1.
Really? Yep.
Yes. Mm. Not a doubt in my mind.
Wow. And the Chargers should have gone for it on 4th and 1 in overtime
100%.
At their own 37-yard line and not punt it to Patrick Mahomes.
That one's actually
that
even a bigger no-brainer. I mean, honestly, I would, and I was a big fan of Anthony Lynn. I would fire Anthony Lynn this week. A, for that, and B, for what he said about Herbert.
Yes.
It was ridiculous. He crushed the future of his franchise for no good reason.
Yeah.
I'd fire that guy this week.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yep.
Like, the idea of him not going for it on 4th down in overtime with Patrick Mahomes waiting on the – of course you're going to lose if you punt that ball. 100% of the time you're going to lose.
So are you angry when the Seahawks punted there?
I was still so residually angry from the third down fade from the Jeremy Bates call.
I was going to say, you're calling Jeremy Bates!
Well, I first had to look up his name because I couldn't remember. I kept thinking it was Jed Fish.
Oh, yeah, but he's around, too.
Then I remembered it was Jeremy Bates. So I had
but
to
the
Google
fourth
that.
Down and one week before in Atlanta, you throw a touchdown to DK.
I know, I didn't like that either. It worked, but I didn't like it.
And Tyler Lock was wide.
Also, it was also fourth and five.
On that play?
Yes, fourth and five. All right, you got to throw the ball. I get it. Like, you've got to at least get it past the sticks. And in that case, a deep ball, while obviously harder to complete, isn't, like, ridiculous. But I didn't like it. It worked, but I didn't love it. And I heard Pete say that was the third option on that play. It sure didn't look like Russell went through his progressions
he didn't
to get
to have
there.
Any of that.
Get out of here. Pete was
he
throwing
had about
deep.
Three quarters know. Of a second I'll before there was a guy in his
talking
face.
About.
I'll believe Pete, though. That's probably Russell Wilson saying, this is me. This is my time.
Maybe.
It's been happening all season
Stop
long.
Stop cooking. You had third and one for a reason because you were moving the ball on the ground. Just run it again.
Tyler was wide, wide, wide open.
He was wide.
Let's calm down. Howdy. I know you were busy talking instead of watching, but calm down. That's not true. What did you think of third and one?
Yeah, I think they should have run the ball. I would have run it on third down. I would have run it on fourth down. Yeah. I would have put the ball in my best player's hands in that moment when my defense could not rush the passer, when I've lost Bruce Irvin, when I've lost Quandre Diggs, when I've lost Marquise Blair, when I've lost those guys, I have no 12s making any noise, and I have to throw Jordan Brooks as a defensive end to try to rush. All of those things would have factored into my head more than a field goal. Okay, well, we give him the ball.
Hold on, that's a key point, though. You say
it's
that again.
Huge.
If
it's a two-point game, I don't do that.
You got to punt on fourth down. I totally agree with that. But up five, they need to score a touchdown, so they can't take it all the way down to the wire. If you give them the ball back with 2 minutes left at your, 35-yard line or so?
Yep.
You might get the ball again with a chance to go down and kick a field goal.
Correct.
There's so much upside to going for it on fourth down. If you get it, you win. If you don't get it, you still might win.
Yes.
But if you punt, you're giving them plenty of time to come down and score
and to use
touchdowns.
The whole clock and to burn your timeouts if they want to and take it to the final second as they did. Yeah, I absolutely, in retrospect, and I can't say I was screaming at the TV in that moment. I was saying, you got to go for it here. But once they punted, I'm like, okay, you're playing some of the odds. But the more that I thought about it in the 48 hours since, and most importantly, if you're in that spot again over the course of this season, all right, you don't punt it on fourth and five in Atlanta. You go for it. It pays off. It's a huge play. It really propels you to a multi-score win in that game. In that situation, if you would have lost and Cam Newton would have gotten in and Bobby wouldn't have made the play he did and Leno and LJ and everybody, right, I think you'd go back and in that spot down all those guys.
Oh, if Cam had rumbled
and
into the end
emotion,
zone there,
yes,
you're crushing those two decisions.
Yeah.
You're crushing them. Now, it worked out, and I'm so happy, man. This is not going to be a negative podcast. I mean, what their offense is doing right now is flat out ridiculous. We've certainly never seen it in our 10 years. But gosh, I really did not like either of those two decisions at all. And I didn't really like it when Carson went down either. Like, hey, man, get a first down and
dive
you're going to chew so much clock.
You just got to dive forward.
Yeah.
Once you slide, you go down. The minute you initiate that,
but even if he had been knocked out of bounds, it wouldn't have been the end of the world. Those yards are huge. You've got to find a way to pick up a first down.
Yep.
So I don't know. I was just distraught in that moment. But I'll tell you what. When Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick get together, they play some football games, man. I mean,
the two 137 years between the two as they teed it off Sunday night.
It was amazing. When they play against each other, they play great games. Now,
yes, they do.
Why do you think Pete's beaten Bill Belichick three of the last four games? Now, obviously, the one in the middle is the one he would trade the other three for. Don't get me wrong. I'm not.
Correct.
This is not supposed to be a Pete's better than Bill thing. Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time in any sport. I don't really have much of a doubt about that. Certainly. I'm not conflicted about that. Yep. But I am curious why Pete has been able to beat Bill three of the last four times.
Yes, I would say first name Russell, last name Wilson. That guy
you can't
is
quite say that when in
I
three
can,
of those
because
games
in those
they
three
had
games,
the GOAT.
because in those three games that he beat him, he was unbelievable. In New England at night, as a rookie, shutting up Scott Zolak, and then Sunday night, just pristine. Mm-hmm. So in those three games, I think Bill would tell you the same thing, that, yeah, there's a lot of other matchups we win, and, you know, what do they say about fights? Styles make fights, you know, and this is an awesome style of one group that loves to morph every single week and game plan change and do whatever to their personnel, and the other side that believes so wholeheartedly in what they do and a conviction about their system, and you know, they basically play what they play, with a few tweaks here and there. So styles make great fights, and these two respect the heck out of each other. But I think Bill would tell you, too, number three has been an absolute difference maker in those
matches. Well, he was talking about him after the game. I don't know how much you enjoy Bill Belichick press conferences. When that game ended, all I wanted was a Belichick presser. Like, Belichick cracks me up in his press conferences. If you are able to view them as comedy and not be angry about them, they're the best.
Well, they're made even better when it's like a Zoom press conference. Yeah. He seems to be sitting in front of a green screen with like poor clip. It's amazing.
Now, I only heard it. I couldn't find it. He didn't bring the beak nose thing out.
No, he saved his horror film mask. He looked like the Penguin from Batman or something. He tucked that away. He didn't get fined for wearing his half mask, right, of course. But no, that didn't make an appearance. Well, thankfully.
Think he uses the same scissors to cut the mask that he cuts his sleeves?
Yes, it's the one from the subway.
Can you picture him before the game in his coach's meeting room? You're thinking he's studying his game plans and everything else.
Figuring out the mask. He's got Ernie Adams for that. Ernie.
Some interns walked in like, coach, here's the mask you have to wear. He's like,
I think Bill is, I don't think that's a last minute thing. Like, he spent some time thinking about that, how he can stick it to the league. There's nothing that, I mean, if you don't think Bill Belichick's bitter about Spygate, you're crazy. He will find any opportunity he can to stick it to the league when it comes to things like that. But look, Bill, before every game, is as effusive in praise of his opponent as anybody. And so you kind of have to take everything he says about the team before the game with a grain of salt, because he'll take the, like, 0-14 Jets and be like, oh, they got some guys who can beat you. And he'll kind of, like, go all the way through. Well, I don't know what games you were watching, because they run the ball as well as anybody. And you're like, Bill, come on. There's no way that's what you see. But that's his style. He always wants his players to respect the opponent going in. He doesn't always say the same things after the game. Usually he says nothing. So hearing him talk this way about Russell Wilson did sink in.
They obviously, you know, played a little bit better than we did and deserved to win. We got a good football team. We got a great quarterback. Glad we only have to play him once every 4 years. I think he's a tremendous player. They got a lot of good players. But in the end, we just, you know, came up a little bit short, and, you know, proud of the way that, our guys competed here, and, you know, we just didn't quite have enough.
Man, I'll admit I didn't like it as much when I had to interview him every Monday. It was like, when you're on the other end of that, occasionally we'd have to interview him on the phone, and quite literally, I think one of the interviews we hung up after 2 minutes because he just, like, wouldn't do it. You're just like, okay, well,
see you later,
thanks, coach, see you later. Like, clearly you don't want to do this. But when he starts smacking his lips like that, when I used to be a reporter, I would edit all those out of the sound I made for our radio station. Painstaking process. I mean, just like, Howdy knows.
Yes.
I needed a macro or one of your little hotkeys or something to just edit all that stuff out. But he went on later to talk even more about Russ. And I don't know, I get the sense that the, like, the Russ MVP campaign is on.
Mm.
DK tweeting it last night.
Yeah, Chris Collinsworth talking about, I don't know, just it you know, these things take a little bit of like a collective conscious decision that all of a sudden Russell's the guy, and it just seems like that's happening right now, bro.
Yeah, well, it's all across the league. Quarterbacks are feasting. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has never looked better. He had 6 drops in the game that I called. Jared Goff has been phenomenal and torched the Eagles. Your guy, Josh Allen, up in Buffalo, throws for 404 touchdowns.
He's looked better. Mahomes,
Salt's boy.
He's looked better.
Patrick
Mahomes,
Kyler
accurate.
Murray. I mean, there's no rush. There's very little hitting. There's no emotion in these stadiums. It is a practice field environment. It looks like 7-on-7, and this does not diminish anything from what you just said. It's just a little kind of broader perspective is you just kind of look around the league and you realize Lamar Jackson is still off to a phenomenal start. I mean, it's just the quarterbacks that know how to play this game.
Yeah.
are feasting. It's like a golf course.
Brock,
it's a difference between winged foot, right? That just distinguishes and humiliates the poor players from the good ones. And, you know, this season feels like the tournament where DJ shot 30 under, receiving greens, soft greens, easy greens. I can drive the green. And quarterback after quarterback after quarterback after quarterback in the league right now is taking apart the course.
Yeah, I think it's a really good analogy. You've been on fire with these recently. Is this a Fox thing? You're hanging out with Cowherd and now your analogies are on point?
It is.
Jeez. I think it's a perfect analogy, but I don't know that it's just about what Russell's doing. It's about the way they're talking about him.
Yes, that's fair.
And when the narrative nationwide changes on Russ to, wait a minute, why hasn't this guy gotten an MVP vote? And what are we doing here? And look what he's out there. And their offense has changed a little bit. And more than anything, he's got weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that changes the conversation around him more than anything
else.
Oh,
for sure, for sure. And yes, and you don't have defense, right? I mean, you're not taking the ball away. You're not holding people to, 150 yards and 10 points. And you don't have, yes, Jamal Adams was phenomenal week one, still pretty good week two. You know, you get one takeaway, right? You do get the one interception that you immediately turn into 7 points. But you are not benefited as he was early in his career by an elite run game and an even more elite defense.
Is there
a different story?
Just going back to the Pete and Bill conversation, why Pete's beaten Bill? Your answer is Russell Wilson. That's probably he's played really incredibly well in those three wins. There's no doubt. But I mean, Bill's had Tom Brady for three of them and Cam Newton threw for 400 yards in the other. So quarterback play for the Patriots certainly hasn't been the problem or anything. Is there any, when I think about the contrast between Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll, most of it has to do with kind of their style, right? And then the style with which their teams play. Bill's teams tend to play a little bit tight, but controlled, like they don't make mistakes almost ever, whereas Pete's teams make a lot of mistakes, but they play very, very loose and free.
Yep.
Has that shown up in those games? Did that show up Sunday night? Did you think Pete's team played freer?
Not necessarily. Yeah, not necessarily. And I think obviously watching Cam Newton operate this thing in a very different way. I didn't think Cam had that still in him. I don't know if you did. But
I did.
After the last two,
I'm a Cam fan. I can't help it. I like Cam.
You thought he still would be that capable after getting as beat up as he did physically and emotionally.
Yeah, I think that if you don't like put anybody near Cam, he can throw the ball down the field.
Yeah.
I think anybody can.
Yep.
Nathan Peterman. If you don't put any pressure on a quarterback in the NFL, he can throw.
I said earlier, kind of big picture, Bill Belichick and the guys that have followed him, and none of them have had success, by the way. Patricia, I think, is about to get canned in Detroit, and you can add him to the list. And Flores is off to a disastrous start again in Miami. Mm-hmm. And any of his disciples have not necessarily gone on. Even Bill O'Brien, I guess, would be the one you could say has had the most success. But, he does his week to week and truly will do whatever they got to do that week in that game plan against that other team and know that team's personnel better than, their own teammates do, right? I mean, that is all real, that attention to detail. Whereas I think Pete, to your point, is a little more loose. They're still on their details, but it's much more about them and their style and their system than it is necessarily, your counterpart and who you're fighting. And as I said a bunch of times, man, difference in styles there. It does make for a great fight. And
sure
these three in prime time have been just phenomenal.
Well, and then you throw in the two oldest coaches. They both have their sons coaching with them. It was weird. NBC showed Belichick's kid. And afterwards, I figured that was going to be an excuse to show Pete's kid as well. Like, they kind of missed that storyline. Maybe they were distracted by the mullet. I don't know what happened. But,
it's plural. One's at least a coordinator calling plays. And,
true.
And Brennan is the, assistant O-line coach. And Nate's the receiver coach.
I just think it's interesting that they have their kids kind of doing that with them. And they've reached that point in their career. And I don't get the sense that it's nepotism in either. I guess there's an element of that. How else? Maybe they wouldn't have found their way there. But I get the sense that the kids are qualified.
By the way, along those lines, and again, kind of fun to be out on the road and studying teams a little bit more globally, I think every coach, I'm serious, like Clint Kubiak, Gary Kubiak's son.
Really?
Adam Zimmer is the co-defensive coordinator for Mike's. Like, if
wow.
you go around,
I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yes. If you
well,
go,
that does,
I
that does make it sound like nepotism then.
Yes.
Yeah, let me change my tune on that. Sounds like
yes.
what you call nepotism. Okay, fair enough.
Yes.
great.
You get some Kyle Shanahan's when you do it that way.
I guess
too,
that's so. True. Right. Well, you know, the nice thing is the Seahawks don't have anybody who's, well, Schottenheimer. All right. Well, yeah. All right. So there's that. Anyway, we're just kind of moving right past
Don't
that.
You hate on Shoddy.
I'm not. He's having a heck phenomenal. Of a start.
Dude, what a Thank game.
I love throwing Cam Newton into the Patriots-Seahawks mix. That's awesome because yep. Seahawks and Cam have always played great games against each other. So anyway, I loved all of that whole element. I found myself thinking about, you know, this sort of friction point we've talked about between what's been improved for the Seahawks and what hasn't, right? Gosh, the list of what's been improved has really shown up, man, through first two games. I mean, just kind of quickly run through yes. these position groups that we talked about. I don't want to spend all day. And we'll get to the D-line, which is on the other side of this. But how good have the wide receivers been?
Oh.
They've been unbelievable.
DK. How cool to see DK against the best in the game ratchet it up even another notch physically. I mean, he just grown man, just absolute. We knew that. And actually, I was talking to Luganville the other day, Salk, and you'd be happy because Luganville was like you. He's like, yeah, sorry, injured for 3 years, never had production in college, just not buying it, not going to see it. And even he's like, yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to start really burying that sentiment because this guy just continues to improve.
He's ridiculous.
Lockett looks back to normal. Spain catches a touchdown. They're all Swain. David Moore.
Swain. That's Swain. That's sorry. Howdy's boy.
Not sorry. Sarah Spain. It's Freddie Swain.
Freddie Swain. That's the guy Howdy said would never amount to anything.
Never.
Yes.
Nothing.
Listen to him.
I'll play the long game.
I root for Freddie Swain as hard as anybody in this team just because I want him. I want Howdy to shut up. Is this the best? Certainly, they're no longer a pedestrian wide receiver group, although it's interesting how that group ended up turning out to be pretty good when all was said and done. But
yep.
is this the best group of wide receivers they've ever had in Seattle as a group?
Mm.
Under Pete, probably.
I'm talking ever. Mm.
That's a good.
That 13 team with Percy Harvin,
I know it
Sidney
ended up
Rice,
being that
Doug
way.
Baldwin, Golden yeah. Tate, Jermaine yeah. Kearse.
It ended up being that way, but not at the time.
At the time, no.
It was hard yeah. to say that at the time. That group ended up being very good when all was said and done.
Once they had Josh Gordon back in here?
Just watching them right now,
yep.
it sure looks as good. DK is just such a freak, and Tyler Lockett is, he's unique. I mean, he's always open.
Joey yep. Galloway, Brian Blades.
Yeah.
It was a good no. era.
Maybe it was. No, I mean, no. who was throwing them the ball?
Whoa.
Brock Huard.
Who threw those? They didn't even
John
did they have
Freeze.
Anybody to throw those guys the ball?
Johnny Kitna dropping some dimes. Yeah. Warren Moon for a year.
Glenn
throwing
Foley.
For like 4,000 yards. No, this group, they've got to do it consistently, and that's been the thing with David Moore. He's gone stretches. He's gone half a season. Like, wow, they cut Brandon Marshall because David Moore looks like he's going to be the guy,
Heck
and then he
play,
disappears
baby.
For a few weeks. And,
Heck of a play he made
yes,
on Sunday night.
Stupid good.
So, wide receiver. Significantly improved over a year ago, despite having some of the same people. Offensive line, I think, is the biggest improvement on the team by far. Mm. I can't believe how good the offensive line is. For everything that we want to say about Russ cooking and this and that, other than a couple of holding penalties, they've barely had any negative plays.
And the false starts. And right, their play has been phenomenal. Their penalties have been abysmal.
Of the false starts, one of them was on Greg Olsen and one of them was on Tyler Lockett or Freddie Swain.
Yeah.
Like I know there have been some
and
false
Dwayne
starts.
Brown and Shell and
they've had a couple. I'm not saying they've been perfect. No offensive line is. So if you're comparing Correct. Them to perfection, good luck.
They've been noticeably unnoticeable.
They yes. have been noticeably unnoticeable. I saw Pro Football Focus said Damian Lewis was the third ranked rookie in the league so far.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, and he's had a couple of holding calls
he's
to go
the
with
league
that.
In offensive line penalties.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. I've been really, really impressed. They've barely been behind the sticks. They haven't run as much as I thought they would or should, but when they've run well and there have been holes and you're not seeing guys getting destroyed in the backfield like we did a few years ago. And Russ certainly has time back there.
Yeah, I'd say good. I'd say they've been good. I don't know if I'd say they've been great. Russell's still getting hit a lot. I think the four touchdowns he throws, he still takes a shot in the jaw on four of the five. So he's still, and even in Atlanta, he took a couple just vicious shots. So, you know, but they've been able to stay ahead of the chains, to your point, stay on schedule, make the job easier. You can communicate. It's a lot easier with no noise whatsoever in any of these environments. Makes it a little bit easier. Posick, as I said a week ago, has been one of the most improved, if not the most improved player on this team. So, yeah, I think they've been good. And if you give number three a good O-line, not even great, not elite, you just give him good, right, he will make them much better.
But the last few years, last 5 years, it's been, not been bad.
Good. Yes.
Or awful.
Right. I mean, like, it's certainly been subpar and up to awful. So the fact that they're good, the fact that they're a positive, that's an unbelievable improvement, and probably I think the biggest difference on this team so far has been an offensive line. Tight end hasn't really shown up too much yet, but it's certainly been good, minus a play or two, and certainly I think Greg Olsen would like that ball back. Cornerback, I think it's hard to say they've been great because they've given up nearly 800 yards in two games,
yep,
through the air, but I actually believe the corner play has looked better than last year.
It has been better than last year.
And they've made,
and that's not saying much. I mean, last year was horrific. Last year, you couldn't make a play on the ball, partly by scheme and what you were trying to do to just stay on top and keep everything in front and bend, 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 bend. But to see Dunbar actually intercept a ball and nearly another and have his eyes in and make a couple plays. And Shaquille's had a play, a breakup each game. So, yes, the corner play has been improved.
Safety has definitely, I think, been better.
Yep, don't
right?
even talk, I mean, about that.
Adam's been the best player on the team other than Russ, and I'm so upset about the Marquise Blair thing. I'm just
awful.
I'm so sick over that. It's so sad. I was really looking forward to what he was going to do this year. So, but they're at least set up now to survive that. And then, all right, linebacker hasn't shown up a ton, but yeah. I think Bobby looks better than he did a year ago. He seems to be more open and free and making plays, and I'm bummed about Bruce, but you know, I like what's happened with the linebackers, and I would really like to now add Clay Matthews to that group to replace Bruce Irvin.
Gonna have to do something, you know, unless you're now going to rely on Cody Barton as your strong side linebacker to set the edge against the Rams, set the edge against the Cardinals, set the edge against the 49ers. I mean, Bruce Irvin was here to me for those six games more than anybody else, with George Kittle and Juszczyk, with the 49ers, with the Rams and Whitworth and their group and what they do on the edge, and with Arizona now in their run game and their quarterback. That's the most dynamic, you know, right there with Lamar in the league. Like, Bruce was here as a strong side linebacker to set that edge. Now that is a gaping hole.
So has it been enough? I mean, obviously it has because they've won both games, but in that friction point between these improved groups all over the team, which have been amazing and the most balanced offense I can ever remember. I mean, they do anything they want, it seems like, offensively. And on the other side is this defensive line, Brock. It's abysmal. It's worse than I thought it would be.
Don't tell Pete Carroll that.
I don't care. It's worse than I thought it would be.
Mike, they had their hands on a lot of sacks. They could have got home Sunday night.
So close.
It would have changed all of this perception.
Well, he was talking about it on the Pete Carroll show with Danny and Gallant on Monday.
You know, there's been some conversation about the pass rush. We missed four sacks. We missed them. I mean, they were right there. I guess we missed three legitimate. There was two by Jamal. There was four sacks we missed out on. LJ had one, and Benson had one. We were right there. We just got to get the guy down. Now, he's phenomenal at making you miss, but the rush allowed us to be there. And had we made those sacks on that night, it would have been an extraordinary night of playing defense because those were all critical opportunities to stop him from the drives continuing to go. So it was a great night of football. It was really fun to see.
I don't know, man. On third down, it sure looks like Cam, Matt Ryan, whoever it is, can just kind of hang out back there, smoke a cigarette, get themselves into position, and throw the ball wherever they want.
Yeah. Yeah, when you bring extra people, and you bring Jamal a couple times, and you bring extra people, I would hope you would at least hit the quarterback. I mean,
yeah, when we got him 6-on-5, we almost got there. We were so close.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, when you have those chances, you'd sure love to see it. We're not talking about 6-on-5, and I'm not talking about 5-on-5. I'm talking about the New York Giants and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Baltimore Ravens and the Seattle Seahawks and the Denver Broncos. I'm talking about 4-on-5. I'm talking about the simplest of math equations that this league has shown perennially for the last two decades, and especially against Jared Goff and Kyler Murray and even Jimmy G. Your four have to beat their five. And if you don't, you're not going to win the division, or it's going to be unbelievably hard. Like, if you're going to play the Arizona Cardinals and your four cannot impact Kyler Murray at all, and your four cannot impact Jared Goff at all, nor Jimmy G, I don't know how you win three of those games. Russell could, by himself, score 35 points and be unbelievably dynamic and phenomenal, but it will all fall on him if you cannot impact the quarterback with a four-man rush.
Yeah, it's interesting kind of looking through their schedule. I agree with everything you just said, Brock, and what Kyle said as well, even though it was mean. It's interesting looking at their schedule moving forward because their division is really, really tough. This is the best division of football. It's not close. All three other teams are at the very least good. All three of them have what appear to be very good offenses, at least in some respects. And all three of those quarterbacks are, well, I think Kyler Murray looks fantastic. Yep. And Jimmy G and Jared Goff kind of are what they are, but they're good, solid passing quarterbacks. Other than those three, I'm not sure they really face another good quarterback. I guess Dak this week. Other than that, like once they're done with Dak, it's just their division.
Oh, they drew a huge bonus.
Carson Wentz looks terrible. I'm still not. I mean, I know Josh Allen's looked better, but okay. Kirk Cousins is meh. Like, there's a lot of meh in the quarterbacks they're going to be faced. The Jets and the Dolphins.
No, they avoid a lot of tier one quarterbacks and even tier two.
Giants. I mean, like Daniel Jones Locke or whatever. I mean, like those guys are not that good.
Nope.
There's a lot of meh. Now, the guys they face in their division. Pretty darn good. I mean, like, there's going to be battles there. But they're going to have – Brock, they got to do – you can't – how can you play an entire NFL season without impacting the quarterback?
Yeah. So is that going to be Shaquem? Is he going to have to come up and rush? Because at least his
– No.
At least he gave
– Let's just be – no, it's not.
Are you sure? I mean,
no,
at least he gave you some positive – at least he gave you some positive rush a season ago.
He's on the practice squad.
In some moments,
to be fair, Benson Mayoa has given them some positive rush.
A couple times.
Benson Mayoa has not been bad. This isn't a rip job on any specific person. Benson Mayoa has been good. Yep. Honestly, like he's kind of what I expected out of Benson Mayoa. And if he was your second or third best pass rusher, you'd be like, oh, that's good. And you got a little something from Benson Mayoa. Great.
Yep.
But you're counting on him to be your Lawrence Taylor.
Correct.
There's a pretty wide gulf.
Well,
and that's not apologies to Benson Mayoa. Between him and LT, between him and Derek Thomas, between him and any premier pass rusher, that's not what he is. He's a second or third pass rusher who comes off the edge when other guys are getting double teamed, takes advantage of a single block, and wins sometimes. That's great.
I love a guy like that. He's a Super Bowl. He's a Super Bowl winning team's third rusher.
Yes.
He could do that in this league, you know.
And
seven
if you have
sets.
An offense like the Seahawks do, he might be the Super Bowl winning team's.
Whoa,
whatever. Whoa. Second rusher.
Yes.
But is he going to be your best pass rusher?
Yeah.
That doesn't work. It's not going to fly.
Well, you'll activate Alton Robinson. He'll be active this week, and Daryl Taylor. They're not counting on him yet. We'll see if Daryl what happens there with DT. I think Shaquem Griffin, you're going to have to activate on the practice squad. You're probably talking to Clay Matthews, but if you don't sign Clay like early this week, he's got to go through COVID testing and protocols. And
why don't they sign Ziggy Ansah? Oh, wait, he already went to the Niners.
He went to the Niners.
Did you get Rasheem Green back?
So here's my question.
Maybe. He's got a neck injury. Those are always concerning.
If Ziggy Ansah can't outrun 45-year-old injured quarterbacks like McCown, what's going to happen when he's trying to chase down Russell Wilson? You know, I swear, if he catches Russell Wilson,
if he's motivated,
I'm going to call for Russell's immediate retirement.
Yep.
Russ, it's time to retire. You've been caught by Ziggy. That's it. All right. Brock, let's talk for a moment about chicken. We spent a moment or two here. Because September is National Chicken Month. Here in Seattle this year, we're calling it winter. Or at least that's what it looks like outside at the moment. But in general, National Chicken Month, and in order to celebrate, Famous Dave's, our friends over at Famous Dave's, are doing a fried chicken feast, the winner fried chicken dinner, Brock.
Mm.
Here's what you get. Two fried birds. Two, not one, not a double, two fried birds. Okay? What's your favorite part of fried chicken, by the way? What do you go after first?
Drumstick. I always go after the drumstick hard.
Of course you do. You're like 7 years old.
Yes.
I go thigh.
Thigh is the answer.
Yeah.
Absolutely the answer.
Thanks.
As you get older, like here's the progression of what it's like to eat chicken. As a kid, you obviously like the drumstick.
As a toddler, you go drumstick.
That's right, because you can't. You don't have to cut it.
Right.
With your kid using a knife and fork to
easy
cut
on
chicken
the drumstick.
It's is incredibly
fall
challenging.
Fall off the bone dark meat.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's for kids.
It's for toddlers.
It's like putting ketchup on a hot dog. You're a child.
Right.
Then as you get older, you kind of graduate to the breast meat. And you're like, oh, breast meat's kind of where it's at. It's the white meat. You kind of start to think that's like what you're supposed to eat. But then you eventually learn about chicken wings as you get older. And you're like, oh, chicken wings are fantastic. But I will say, in a full bird, or in this case, two full birds, chicken wing is not the same as like when you're going to get chicken wings. And that's when eventually you age into and mature into the thigh.
Yep.
The thigh is the taste. It's the best combination of taste, and there's enough meat there, and you don't look like a kid while you're eating it.
True, true.
So I'm just saying, howdy.
Well, good for you guys.
One day you'll grow up
and
understand.
Go ahead and sacrifice the good flavor for your appearances. Nice.
You don't have to with the thigh. That's the thing.
That's just not
you do true. Get a good dark. I mean, the thigh is a nice common ground.
Yeah. It's where everybody can meet.
Meet
in the
me halfway.
All right, with the two birds, you get corn, you get coleslaw, you get beans, you get fries, you get cornbread. You can serve 6 to 8 people for under $45, only available here during September. Go to togo.famousdaves.com. Now, available for pickup and delivery in Northgate, they've opened the Ghost Kitchen. Now, I don't know whether that's for Halloween or what the whole idea is with the Ghost Kitchen, but it's there at Northgate. Ghost Kitchen. Do you know what that means?
You're going to have to go to find out.
Right. Is that so? This is just like a tease.
You're going to have to go
it's
to
an
find
intrigue
out what a ghost,
thing.
Ghost kitchen
good luck,
is.
Bro.
Have you ever Googled Ghost Kitchen?
You don't want to Google Ghost
I don't think
kitchen.
I do either. Nope. I feel like it'll bring some sort of virus
right.
to my computer.
Absolutely.
All right. togo.famousdaves.com for the two fried birds.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock, I have not just three Blue 88 questions for you. It's a podcast. We can throw out all the rules. I got 5 questions for you today. 5 questions for you, and maybe even a bonus if I feel like it. That's the kind of football season we're in right now. So here we go. Question number one, Blue 88, starting here. Big final play of the game on Sunday night. Who are we giving the credit? Who made
Bobby
the play?
Wagner. Bobby Wagner.
Really? So you're going with Jeff Schwartz, who
yes,
said the
I
same
am.
Thing. Did you,
yes.
did you watch that?
I did.
Was he right?
I did. He's 1,000% right. Yes, Lano Hill does his job. And honestly, you could have done that. And Howdy could have done that job. You could have.
Probably not. No.
No, no, you absolutely could have. You could have come down and you could have, you know, collapsed. You could have gone on all fours and, you know, built a pile.
I would have dove at his ankles. That guy would have jumped in the air right over me.
Seriously.
And been like, what's next? Let's go.
No.
Yeah, but
no.
Then you'd be on the ground. You'd get to tackle camp.
You could have done that job. Like, that's a strong effort. That's awesome.
You could have easily waved your arm at Cam as he dove over you and ran you over.
Yes. L.J. Collier, probably. So, Leno gets the bronze medal, right? He's there. He's on the spot. He's got to do his job. He did his job. He wins the bronze medal. L.J. Collier makes his finest play as a Seahawk yet. A very poor block on the other side, but if we're going to celebrate negative or positive, the positive of LJ is to beat that block, and he's in position, and he's right there, and he makes things happen, and he gets a silver medal. But it doesn't happen. They don't stop him unless Bobby Wagner goes behind the play, shoots behind the gap, and with just unbelievable force gets in the way of the pulling guard. It forces Cam Newton to have to bubble out and ultimately do a backflip. And unlike Ortiz Jenkins in the flip by the lake that goes into the end zone, Cam Newton comes up short and flips up short, and Bobby Wagner gets the gold medal, the gold star, without his effort, and if he does not attack, and they call it shoot the gun. Those linebackers got to shoot the gun, pull the trigger, do whatever you want to do. And he saw that play enough, by the way. That wasn't the first rep. That wasn't the second rep. Even Bill Belichick took his headsets off and said, okay, and we know how you're going to line up. We know how we're going to line up. We're going to do this thing mano a mano. And then Bobby said, nope, that's not good enough because mano a mano, we're going to lose. So I'm going to have to come around and knock the guard off and make the play. And without 54, the Seahawks lose Sunday night.
I'm really happy to hear that. And not that I wasn't happy for Leno and Collier, because I think two guys who've been kind of beat up the way they have, you know, that's a good thing for both of their confidence. But remember last year we kept saying, like, when is Bobby going to make those Bobby plays?
Yep.
The fact that he did that without necessarily even making the tackle seems so enormously important to me. That in the biggest moments, the guy you spent all that money on came through and actually made the play.
Yes.
That's so important to me. So,
and if you were, and honestly, if you talk to Dave Wyman, whose linebacker instincts and eyes I trust more than mine 100-fold, he would say, you know, Bobby's got to pull the trigger at times. You know, he's got to come downhill. He's got to be violent. He's got to get back to being the Bobby, you know, his first 5 years rather than the one that played a lot more passively the last couple years. And then the biggest moment of the game, he was hyper-aggressive. And without him, as I said, they don't find a way to win.
Looked like Funa made a nice play on that also. I couldn't really tell, but that was my gut. Gut tells me Funa made it.
He made a couple good plays, a couple tackles for loss. Yeah. Yep.
He had his hands off his knees. He was in the horse stance.
He was.
Like Brock, so. All right. Question number two. Well, if we talk about the credit for the goal line stand, how about the flip side of it? Whose fault was the pick six?
Whose fault was it?
Yeah.
It is a critical error on the grade sheet of Greg Olsen. A critical error. It may be a... It's an S to an S minus on Russell's.
Really?
Probably an S. It's satisfactory.
Really?
You get a plus, you get a satisfactory, you get a minus, you get a critical error, you get a foobar. So that you know, maybe even for Greg it's that, because that was messed up beyond all recognition. To be a veteran 15 years into this game and have a ball go right off your fingertips for an interception, that should never, ever happen. So that one's on Greg. Yeah.
For sure.
Like 100%?
1,000%.
Really?
95%.
Really? Like, you guys are 100% sure of that?
95%.
I don't know, like...
Right in the hands. Right in the hands of your veteran tight end, not some playmaking wide receiver. His job is to be sure-handed.
So you've watched his play more than anybody else, because I love you, and you're going to try to state your case, and as you did yesterday with... Or on Monday with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Where did the ball end? Was it behind him?
Yeah.
Where was it?
It was behind him.
On his back shoulder pad? Like, he didn't have to turn his hips.
It was above.
He had to reach to his back shoulder.
Above his back shoulder.
Yes. Right.
Did he have to turn his hips?
His shoulder.
If he had turned his hips, he probably would have made the catch.
Okay.
It would have hit his shoulder pad if his hands weren't there.
But to be fair, Russell's also leading that pass because the guy who's guarding him is on the outside of him. So... I have a little bit of grace there, too.
It wasn't even as underthrown as the DK Metcalf touchdown. That was like a step underthrown.
And that's
Greg Olsen was a half a step, but maybe.
That can be underthrown because he's got them beat.
And this ball could be underthrown. The guy, it hit him in the hands.
No, I don't know. I don't know if it was 50-50, but I don't know about 100%. I'm not.
Critical error on one guy's grade sheet, satisfactory to minus.
S minus. It's a minus. I'm sorry. Minus. I can't. If I'm grading...
Okay.
I'm not giving him a satisfactory. He threw a pick six. All right. Question number three. Brian Schottenheimer, who we talked about just briefly earlier, Brian Schottenheimer is now in the booth. He's moved upstairs. He said, I think, so that he could get the same view of the media.
Yes, that's right.
Is that the real reason why Shoddy has moved to the booth?
No. The real view or same view as the media? No.
Yeah, he said, now I can understand why you guys understood our offense so much better than I did. Now I can see what you guys saw and I can
I like Shoddy.
I do too, and he's off to a tremendous start. I would say it's two things, and I think they may be equal parts, and one of them he may say in seriousness, and the other one he probably wouldn't go there, but I will. But the first part is you do have a better view of what the secondary is doing. When you're on the sidelines, you may get a feel for the rush, and that doesn't really matter with Russell. It just, you know, I think after 9 years, we've all learned that. He will take care of that. He'll take shots. He'll be durable. He'll do whatever he needs to do. But you can feel maybe some of those blitzes, and you feel a lot more of the rush. So you feel the game, but you don't get nearly the sense of what you're seeing in the secondary that you do from above. So this has become, I think, a league in many ways. Russell's at the stage of his career where if he gets information in any way on what's going on the back end of things, huge advantage. So I think it's just that bird's eye view to see so much more of the back end of the field, defenses that run from the back, you know, forward, like Bill Belichick's, like the elite secondaries. So I think that's number one. Number two, and I don't know if anybody else will say this or he will, or certainly won't be talked about there, I think he separates himself from the emotion of Pete Carroll. And that emotion is awesome for defensive guys. That emotion is awesome for the team. That emotion is real. It is not fake. As Collinsworth and Michael said, you won't find a 69-year-old that's more high on life, got more juice than Pete Carroll. That is awesome. But when it comes to calling plays and being a step ahead and after big plays, having the next one ready to go and not being emotionally caught up as they were last year down in the red zone in the San Francisco 49ers game where things were late because that sidelines is emotional and it erupts, it distances you from all that emotion. And I think that that is a beneficial factor for the play caller in particular.
That's a great point. I will also say this. I can't believe there's a single offensive coordinator that doesn't go into the booth. I can't believe that 32 out of 32 aren't in the booth. How do you coordinate the offense when you can't see
some play callers or head coaches?
You so trust your eyes upstairs. There are some guys like a McVay or head coach, he's played Matt LaFleur, that are going to so trust Nathaniel Hackett's up in the booth. Yeah, that gives them all their eyes up there. So they can, you know, the head coaches got to navigate a sideline, right? They got to handle other in-game stuff, so they can't necessarily be up there. And there's a bunch of them, but I think the other cords, it's because they have someone they trust so implicitly that's up in the booth.
I am shocked that any offensive coordinator isn't better at his game if he's up in the booth.
Plus, he looks so lonely up there. Why is he all alone? If he were on the sideline, he could be around 100 people. But if he's in the booth, it's like, oh, he's got to be alone. He's got to have a booth to himself.
But I want him by himself in a booth.
But I think they're by themselves because of the COVID stuff, too.
But if you were on the sideline, the COVID stuff wouldn't be a factor.
It's not a factor.
No, but if he's in the booth, the sideline. He's got to be protected.
Right. That's right.
Regardless of the three tests.
Thank you, Kyle. Course. You've got that. Very exactly strange. Right. Yeah. What if they put a dog with each offensive coordinator up in the booth?
Yeah, well.
NFL providing comfort support.
Yes, a very calming presence.
Yes.
You want to talk about Pete's emotion ramping him up. You put a little nice like Basset Hound in there with him.
Incredibly lazy.
Like long ears and just very relaxing.
Now, issues, they'd be oily by the end. Smell bad. Yeah. Bassets don't smell good. Oh. But I think a Basset Hound would be fantastic. Now, they do get stressed. I mean, like, when
Blue 88.
All right,
Blue 88.
Question number
Ryan
four.
Schottenheimer with Charlie the Basset.
Question number four. Bruce Irvin and Marquise Blair, both done for the year. How do you replace them?
Yeah, Ugo Amadi will certainly replace Marquise Blair in coverage.
How'd he play?
He played good. He was a lot stickier than I thought he would be, and getting thrown into the mix there. And in that situation, he knew his assignments, didn't blow anything. So from the neck up, he was solid.
How many of those Edelman catches were on him?
Just probably more on linebackers and Jamal and everybody, you know, and when you're playing kind of some of that zone coverage. But I thought he was willing. I think he's super quick. You know, his challenge is he's not long like Marquise Blair. So he's going to have to be even a step ahead, further step ahead than Marquise to get his hands on the ball. But as you referenced earlier, you're not playing Ben Roethlisberger. You're not playing Drew Brees. You're not playing Tom Brady. You're not playing Aaron Rodgers. You're not playing the
I was waiting for you to get to some of the better quarterbacks in the league now.
Be lucky to play Drew Brees.
When you get to play Ben Roethlisberger and Drew Brees.
But those guys know how to attack nickel. They know how to attack between the hashes. They can't maybe push the ball down the field as much as in the past. But those guys feast on nickelbacks. And we have seen it and seen that position struggle since Justin Coleman. So, no, I think from a coverage standpoint, he'll be fine. He won't hit like Marquise. He won't blitz like Marquise. He's not as long as Marquise. So there is a loss there in the run game. And in your division, where you've got to stop the run, where Blair was moved to that position in particular in this division to help stop the run, that's going to be a little bit problematic. But I think he's the lesser of the two losses. I think Bruce Irvin is a much, much more significant loss in base defense, setting an edge as really your most capable rusher with Mayoa. That was catastrophic. And it's Cody Barton will be asked to play that strong side as he did a year ago.
Will he? More than KJ going over there
and
Jordan Brooks playing his strong?
I think so, because that's not been KJ's deal through his entire career. I mean, he's maybe you mix and match a little bit, but that will probably be the first one this week plate.
Is Jordan Brooks big enough to play over there?
Nope, that's not necessarily his deal either.
Big legs?
You want him running and hitting and sideline to sideline, and that's where his plus strength is. So I think you want to play a rookie to his plus strengths rather than having him fight through doing something he's never done before.
Can Clay Matthews play that spot?
Possibly, but, you know, Clay Matthews has been on the street for a reason, and nobody's looked at his tape the last couple years, and last year in particular, even with some rush.
But I don't need him to be Clay Matthews from 5 years ago. I need him to be better than Cody Barton.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question, that they've studied those snaps a lot more. Does Clay Matthews want to do that? That's dirty work, man. That's no fun. Are you kidding me? Having to block these tight ends and man up against George Kittle and these tackles and do everything you got to do to set an edge. And Bruce can do that. And Bruce has done that.
But think about the advantage, Brock. If he does that on the first two downs, he gets to rush the passer on third down when all of the blockers are occupied somewhere else.
True. Yes. And to have enough stamina and enough juice, enough energy to do all of that when you've done none of it for the last 7 months.
Still, I got to imagine that somebody out there has got to be. You've got to be in the mix. All right, question.
Well, yeah, and you also have, what, 15 per team, 450 practice squad players around the league. So 435 if you take your own away. But I do think Shaquem Griffin's got to get called up because he can add some rush in nickel situations on third down. And, you know, between 435 other guys who have been practicing, who've been at it for 8 weeks, is there somebody that you like that can fill some of that void, you know, that Bruce Irvin in his absence creates? I think that's got to be something you add as well.
I assume you're not calling Earl to replace Marquis Blair.
No. Now, if you lose Amadi or another safety, then, you know, I think Quandre Diggs probably slides to play nickel, you know, and or at least you start entertaining some of that. I think Ugo's going to get first crack at it, as he did the other night. He should. I want to keep, you know, Diggs and Jamal where they are. Jamal much better going towards the line than playing coverage, and I think Diggs can navigate and mitigate some of that.
If there's a safety injury, can you move one of your other corners? I mean, can you get Flowers in the game at corner and get Ugo Amadi at free safety?
Possibly.
So, I mean, like, it feels like there's a lot of things they can do which would not necessitate calling Earl. All right, question five, Brock.
Five?
Yeah, I know, question five. Jeez. I know. We have not seen, they have no offseason this year. We've also seen a tremendous amount of, especially ACL injuries, it seems like. Are those two things related in your mind?
Yes. You have to hit. You have to callus your body. And in the ACL and some of the freakish ones, not as much. But when it's groin and it's hamstring, Detroit had three dudes out with hamstrings, and it's calf and it's Achilles. There is no question to me. Just, you know, just getting your body right. Just getting your body control, putting pads on, running full speed, dipping your hips, right? And just being able to I love the term callus. Right, that's what most of these defensive guys say. You know, like, yeah, you got to callus your shoulders, you got to callus your body, your elbows.
That's what Michael Bennett did so well. That's why he could wear those small shoulder pads.
That's exactly right.
Big calluses. But, should they call him? Hey, should they call Michael Bennett?
I don't. Michael Bennett retired himself. Those guys usually go and hang out. He's probably in the islands chilling the last 8 weeks.
All right.
I don't know how quickly he could ramp.
No, they
back
should
up,
have signed Everson Griffin.
They should have signed Everson.
Dante Fowler or someone when they had the chance.
And this is not a rip job, and I'm not pointing to this in particular, but like KJ, you know, falling into Blair around the pile, right? Just, you know, they haven't hit. You're not around it. You don't know. And KJ's, you know, trying to give a little extra effort and throw his body in there around the pile, but he falls right into Blair's knee and tears his ACL. And, I mean, just, you know, just contact, no matter how much you've played. You know, just creating some of those car accidents and knowing how to steer clear of them and get out of them and not just run right into them all the time. It's not like if I have 20 car accidents, I'm going to be better for the 20th, right? Like a little dummy in the car, like, oh, yeah, I'm still doing great. No, but you learn how to avoid it. You learn how to dip. You learn how to protect yourself. You learn how to protect others around you. It's why you'll hear coaches scream all the time, stay up, stay up, stay up. The more you're in pads, the more you get that body control and, you know, the ability to do that. And without it, yeah, man, what a catastrophic weekend of injuries in the league.
All right, that is a five-question Blue 88. How has it been, man? I mean, you're now 2 weeks in to your NFL responsibilities for Fox. Now, the Big Ten is coming back and the Pac-12. Larry Scott's going to get fired, I heard.
Is he?
That's what I was reading yesterday. Some Twitter rumor.
People didn't like him getting his bonus before.
Or even that he's expecting to.
He himself is expecting
to get fired. And
thus cash the. That may be the best tell yet, yes.
Right. He's looking for as many ways to take
this money and fire 100 people.
Yeah.
What a classy. What a world.
I assume you're still good with your decision here, even if the Big Ten and the Pac-12 come back?
I think so, yeah. You're I mean, happy. Some of that's out of my hands. They kind of make those decisions, the pay grade above mine. But I'll tell you, I've loved it. I knew that I would doing preseason games. You know, the game, the teams huddle up, Mike. You actually have time. Maybe not the Rams this week. They play pretty fast. But you have time to talk to your producer and strategize and people in the booth. And, you know, there's 47, 49 guys with the two practice squad instead of 94 week in and week out. And you know them. So, yeah, the game's not been too fast. The players and the coaches to talk to on these Zoom calls have been just awesome. So, I'm having a blast. I'm just hoping I get a Seahawks game. That's kind of what I'm looking at
the
schedule.
You would think you would at some point. I mean, Chris Myers has had plenty of Seahawks games over
the years. Yes, and it's all different with Cruz and the rankings of Cruz and where they're all at and where the Hawks are. But that would kind of pay the whole thing off if I could have at least one of those.
That'd be great. I would assume you will. It seems like Fox does that a lot.
They do. They try. Hometown games or keep guys in some locales. I hope so.
I think that'd be really great. I would look forward to it. I got to watch a little bit of you this weekend. I think your crew sounds really good. It's been fun. I'm personally very gratified that you're doing NFL games instead of college games.
You're personally very gratified that your 10 years of bragging about NFL Sunday Ticket over the rest of us who went with Pac-12 Network.
Right.
I mean, you're playing the long game.
How's that working out for you?
Well, I watched the 2016 Pac-12 Swimming Championships last night, so you tell me, Mike. Conference of Champions.
I got to watch some of Brock's game on Sunday, which was great.
Different strokes for different folks.
It's been really nice. Oh, good. I'm glad you're enjoying it, man. I figured you would, but it's just kind of cool. It's been this football season is already feels like it's moving fast.
Yes.
Right? I mean, only a couple of weeks. I mean,
say that.
This whole fall thing with the smoke.
You are fast forwarding to winter so fast, Mike.
I know.
Week two, and you're like, whoa, boy, the playoffs are already here.
True fatalist.
I played Chambers last week, which, by the way, can we just talk for a moment about how great Chambers is?
Please do.
They've got to get something back here, Brock. They have to.
They were just announcing the U.S. Open's going to Wingfoot in like 2047 or something. I mean, are we going to get something in our lifetime
Seriously.
Now?
Like, they really need to get back here in some way. The greens are ridiculous. Mm. They look nothing like they... I know every time my grandma, oh, that stupid course. Like, yeah.
He wasn't...
It was baked
fully
out.
Fully wrong, this and that. But
it looks so good.
So
now.
Amazing.
And we played there last week. It was one of the smoky, foggy days. I think it was more fog than smoke. Brock, you couldn't see 150 yards in front of you. Legitimately. You hit a ball and you'd be like, well, let's go find it. Oh, it's right here in the middle of the fairway. Like, you could not tell at all where it was going. What an incredible challenge.
They need an ambassador. Like, I just haven't seen pros coming back and lobbying for it. And when you're down there, they say, oh, Spieth's been back. And
Spieth should lobby for it.
He's eaten dinner or lunch, but he hasn't played here.
Maybe it would get him back in the spirit of things.
Does Spieth need them more, or does he need Spieth?
I don't know.
Did you hear what they said about Spieth on the broadcast?
That
Spieth, after his round Thursday, is like, I'm lost.
Yeah.
Like, my game is lost right now.
It is.
Like,
he needs I don't know. Yeah, press the reset. So,
a lot of people say he's a new swing coach.
He
needs
to go on a soul search. Is what he needs to go.
We should come here.
Ricky
for
Williams.
It.
He should move to Australia. Yes.
He should come here for all of that.
He needs to get dropped off into a jungle and find his way out of it after about 2.5 weeks.
Last thing on Chambers, and we can move on. But every time I get to the 18th green there, I feel bad for Dustin Johnson. Mm. I mean, when I get to 16 and I see where Brandon Grace went into the railroad tracks, I think to myself, that's the worst shot a professional golfer's ever hit. The fact
he missed
that
the fairway by 100, 200 yards.
It's unbelievable how bad that shot is for a professional golfer in that spot. He might have won the tournament if he doesn't do that. Then I get to 18. I'm like, all right, DJ three-putted here. And you look at that green. I don't know how you don't three-putt there.
Yeah.
In those conditions. Like, we three-putt there now on new greens that are slower.
True.
On that day in 2015, forget about it.
That green has so much undulation. It's insane. You realize just how challenging it all is. All right, Brock, we have to talk some Mariners. What they've done here in the last couple of weeks is worthy of conversation. I'm completely obsessed with watching the Mariners every night. I want to be clear. I have had as much fun watching this Mariners team as any I can remember. Now, they're not going to make the playoffs in all likelihood. Now, something special happens this week, and seeing Marco shove the other night and beat the Astros. I mean, they're going to give themselves at least a prayer at this. But regardless of how it happens, I don't know that I've ever enjoyed a Mariners team more than this one.
I don't know if I can say enjoyed. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that. But as far as a game plan going into a season, and then ultimately in a 60-game season coming out of what you had planned, what you needed to see, kind of like a training camp or a spring football where you're like, okay, I need to evaluate this position. I need to know if this guy can play or not. I need to have clarification on whether or not this person moving forward, this scheme moving forward is what we want. Like I can't imagine, regardless of what happens over the final six games of the season, that they will look at the 60 and go, yeah, you know, that, gosh, I just wish we could have got more information on that.
They got everything
I wish we
could have
answered that.
Everything they wanted answered, they did. I'll disagree with you. I think it's amazing to watch them. It's a risk-free investment. You watch the game, you cheer hard, you hope they win, you get excited when they win, and when they lose, it doesn't hurt. It's amazing. I don't get mad when some random reliever who's not going to be here in a few days gives it up. You're like, eh, all right, that guy's not going to be here. Whatever. and when they come through and they deliver and Ty France has a big hit or Kyle Lewis, it's awesome. And yeah. I get to be excited about it. So I've really enjoyed them. I love how clean they play. I think that the fact that they're in a hunt here, even if they don't end up making it, is relevant for these young guys. I think for Kyle Lewis and for Ty Fred, for the bunch of these young guy Marco, for all those guys to be in the thick of what looks to be a pennant chase, sort of, or wild card chase, sort of, I think that's valuable for them to see big at bats or big pitches against the Astros or the Padres or teams that are likely going to go to the playoffs. I think that's incredibly important for them.
Yes. Yes, and even your taxi squad gets to watch it, and those guys were not having to be called upon this year, and you protected that season for all of those guys, and Kyle Lewis going to win Rookie of the Year, right?
He's down.
Kyle Lewis going to win Rookie of the Year, right?
Down to 2.75, zero WAR on the season now.
Yeah, I mean,
rough last month.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's going to, though. They'll give it to the kid in Chicago.
Zero WAR?
Yeah.
Oof. Really?
Yeah.
Marco's going to be in the Cy Young conversation, right?
Well, come on, man. There's no reason to look at these things that
way. No, I'm not hating.
Nobody's going to pay attention to the Mariners for awards.
Marco's been awesome this year.
Marco's
one more quality start. He's going to end sub 3 ERA on the season.
Marco will not be in the hunt for the Cy Young.
Fine.
It will not happen.
Don't be talking. Fine.
I'm not saying that it shouldn't in some other world, but it will not get mentioned one time. No one will think about Marco Gonzalez.
I just did. Mentioned it.
All right, Mike. Jeez.
I let your blood boil
for some respect.
Passing when we need him. Did
you
just
say that, though? I know this is going to sound ridiculous. Is there any chance you watched after the Marco win over the Astros?
No.
Watch the post-game show?
No.
Some reason did. I was like, yeah, I'm going to watch the post-game show after this. The look on Marco's eyes... He shoot daggers, man.
Like, see the scary eye.
Yeah, he like kind of had that look that players get in the playoffs in baseball. So I know they're not probably going to get there, but I love the fact that they're treating it this way, and I think it's going to end up paying some dividends for them. And I think I'd go through this list of players on their team, and I was just trying to go through like, all right, how many of these guys will be there when they win?
Okay.
Tell me.
Oh, the exercise they did last year, right?
When
they decided to kind of tear it down.
Jerry did that, yep.
Yeah.
These are the guys I think will be on a winning team for them that are already on the roster. I think Evan White will be there. I think Torrens will be there. He may end up being a backup by them, but kind of like what I've seen
so far
from him.
Him and Cal Raleigh make a nice little plunk.
Dude, I like what I've seen from Torrens. He looks like he can play. Kyle Lewis should be there. Ty France reminds me a lot of Dustin Pedroia. Not in personality, and he's bigger, obviously, but him, just watch him hit and just side by side. He reminds me a lot of Pedroia. I like watching him hit a lot.
In what position would he be?
I don't know yet, but I think he's there on your team, and you know, maybe he's all over the map. Maybe he plays third base when Seager moves on. Maybe he's the DH, but I think he can hit.
Okay.
I think Marco will still be here, and I think he's got a few more good years left in him. And I think Sheffield, from what I've seen, has been the breakout star of this year. So that's a group of, what, six right there. I think Dylan Moore will be a part of a winning team.
12 bags this year. How about that?
Yeah, I don't know whether he's going to be a crucial, you know, starter on a winning team, but he might be. And at the very least, he's an incredibly good utility. I cannot stop being impressed by Dylan Moore. And I think Crawford is on a winning team. I don't know if he's their shortstop. Maybe he's at second base. I don't know. It kind of depends where they go in free agency. But he's certainly not going to hurt you on a winning team if you've got some guy. I don't want to see him hitting first on a winning team. But if he's hitting eighth, that's a guy that could help you, and I'd be really excited about all of that. So that's a group that I think are all here. Maybe done.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Maybe Lopes as an extra guy. Maybe.
Dunn really bounced back after a rough start. He's been better. Good. He's got 4.2 ERAs.
Yeah, he's been better. Is he going to be really good? Like when you need really good pitching, maybe. Like I'd be excited if it was the case. Maybe he's in the bullpen. They've talked about that for him for years now. So like maybe he's a part of it. Maybe Tim Lopes. He just seems to do good things whenever he's in the game. So all right, maybe Seager if it happens quickly. But that's like 10 guys.
Yeah,
that's a lot. And then by the way, they have some other guys who might round out a roster like that. Kikuchi maybe. I'm pretty down on Kikuchi. I'm sorry. I kind of like this Joey Gerber kid, even though he looks like Andy Samberg. Like he's an extra reliever on a good team, and maybe Tom Murphy comes back. So they got a lot of maybe guys, but you could name a good 6 to 10 that are going to be crucial components, and that's before you add in Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez and all the young pitchers and whatever else you're going to do in free agency or the trade market. So I'm really excited, honestly, really excited about where this is going.
I think that filled up that blank sheet of paper a little bit more than it did a couple years ago,
right?
When they had to make that decision, didn't it?
I think it does. And I cannot commend Jerry enough for his patience this year.
Yep.
The trade he made with Nola, I love it. I mean, it's a bummer to lose Austin Nola. He's a really good player. And you're seeing it still in San Diego. He's been even better there than he was here. But the guys he got back, that was worth it. That was absolutely worth it. I will say, if they miss the playoffs by a game, I'm not going to criticize the Nola trade for a moment, even though if they'd kept him, they might have made it. That was the right thing to do. I won't criticize not bringing up Kelnick. I don't think they should. I won't criticize not bringing up Logan Gilbert. I don't think they should. I will, if they miss by a game or two, I'll wonder about each of those Taijuan Walker starts. The kid they got back for Walker better be good.
Because how's Taijuan done since?
He's been really good.
Okay. Yeah.
And LJ Newsome has not.
Yeah.
So if they miss the playoffs by a game or two, I can't help but think about that one. And it's not that it's a mistake. I get what he's sticking with the plan. It's the right thing to do. But it's the one where it's like, I don't know whether you had to do that. I just don't know if you had to. Just let the guy stick around. See what happens. I don't know. That's just me. But overall, I'm just so incredibly happy with the way this season has gone. So there you go.
It's turn your frown upside
down. My frown's turned upside down.
It's almost made it sunny outside.
No, let's not get carried away.
It's almost made it sunny.
Let's not get carried away. All right. Seahawks and Cowboys. Hopefully none of these crazy onside kicks. And don't need any of that.
Wow. It'll what an amazing kick, though. That was an amazing
great kick. It looked like a putt.
Yeah.
The way it kept curving and curving and curving. It's like, man, it looked like he just caught the slope at the U.S. Open.
It was made amazing by the Falcons' utter stupidity and ineptitude.
Yeah.
If they had a single clue what was going on, the Cowboys wouldn't have come within 5 yards of that ball.
So bizarre.
They were stunned.
I think they thought it wasn't going to go that far.
Yeah.
But they could have grabbed it at any point.
They could have, but I think they thought it wasn't going to make it.
Irrelevant.
Right, we're not going to make it. We got to get going. All right. Thank you, everybody, for a fun podcast. We'll be back with you next week. Until then, the hey.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!